Hello, faithful listeners, and welcome to episode 124 of The Worst People We Know. I'm Mike.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Sean.
And on this week's episode of The Worst People We Know, we're going to talk about Sean's favorite mode of transportation. We're going to talk about another form of transportation, which is Sean's second favorite mode of transportation.
Canoes.
Canoes, yes. The first is trains sorts. And the second is canoes, but electric canoes, which is pretty confusing, but we'll get into it. And then finally, we'll talk a little bit about, hey, since we're talking about electric cars, some taxation and how we actually pay for roads. And yeah, it'll be a nice little convo. How you guys doing? How was your week?
Week was good. You know, not really a whole lot going on these COVID times still. But got some work done.
Getting there. Yeah.
It's a little bit of
sprung.
Spring has sprung in New Jersey, which is lovely. I mean, it was 60 something today, which really does feel, after it was like 20 last week, really does feel fantastic. So that's nice. How's LA these days? Warm?
It's warming up. I went out for a little jog today in very blue skies and sunny and warm, but still like in the 60s, but felt
you're,
nice.
You're jogging
nice
now, huh?
Yeah. Well, I got those new jogging shoes. And
I knew you were going to say you bought a piece of apparel that which required you to.
That's the way to motivate yourself to do anything.
I mean, I started doing it before, and then I was like, I got to update these shoes because I only had like truly barefoot shoes, and I didn't really like running. The problem I have, I like to run to the ocean, but that's like 4.5 to 5 miles, depending on how like the route I take. And then I'm at
that's
the ocean
for there.
Yeah. Then I'm like, exactly. Oh, I have to go all the way back home. And like today I ran there. And then when you get like close to the ocean, it's not good running, not very conducive because there's a lot more people. I put a mask on and I'm just like mingling in a big crowd. But where I run the way there, I find like pretty low traffic streets. But then, I have to like come all the way back. So the first few times I did that with the barefoot shoes, my feet were just like, I was like, that's a lot. Like it was like the first day I went down to the beach like a fool and did like 14 miles in like barefoot shoes.
Which, if you're not used to it, like those take years to get used to, the barefoot shoes. And if you're running longer distances, that could be painful.
The nice part about San Francisco is if you run down to the beach, you can do it all the way through Golden Gate Park. And so you don't have to deal with any cars basically for, and that's, you go from, if you start at Panhandle, that's 0.75 miles and then it's 3 miles of Golden Gate. So you're basically looking at 4 miles out and in, but
the other nice
part, you can park halfway through, whatever,
is you can do it naked. You don't have to wear clothing, which is always a plus when you're running.
You can do that. I mean, anytime in San Francisco.
LA's too judgmental. They're very judgy on your body, but you have to expose only so much of it and then cover up the rest.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
I'll tell you, I was down in Santa Cruz this weekend, and that was an interesting sort of vibe.
I have a very positive connotation to Santa Cruz, but I think I've only been there for like 15 minutes. So I don't know if that's accurate.
Well, in my head, I had a positive connotation, and then I was there, and it was less good. But less good in the way that, like, you know, if I lived there, I'm sure I would find, like, this is, I go at this time, I'd go here, and like, you figure it out or whatever, and maybe like you have like your right haunts and you know what's open. I was very frustrated by my expectations of, it's 10 a.m. on a Saturday. It should be like my neighborhood where there's just like 9 coffee places within like four, like 1 block. Like, it's just like, where am I going to get coffee? It took me 40 minutes to find a fucking coffee place that was open, and there was one. And it was packed. And I was like, well, the demand's there, guys. Maybe a second one could open. It's like,
yeah, that's weird.
But like, visually, it's also kind of odd because you see all, like, there's a lot of homeless guys, right?
Shocking.
And super, super hippie-ish.
A lot of skaters, right? Like, isn't that like a
skater surfer? Yeah, kids skateboarding left and right. Tons of surfers. There was a Scholastic surf competition that was happening while I was down there.
So for people that don't know, Santa Cruz is what, like 45 minutes, an hour? Maybe is it longer than
hour,
that?
Hour 15.
Hour 15.
From San Francisco. South. But part of it is not that far. It's like
over some mountains.
I don't know. Yeah, you got to go through a super curvy mountain. And that's part of the problem with living there is it's basically this two-lane highway is that you have to go from the main highways that go north-south in the peninsula, and it goes across and over. And if there's an accident on those things, your commute goes from an hour to 3 hours. And that's not an uncommon situation. Like, it happens once a month.
It's known for, like, being somewhat, like, of a surf capital. I think that famous Mavericks area is right there. Mm. It also is the place where CrossFit started. So there's a lot of, like, interesting sort of outdoorsy, hippie-ish stuff going on there. So it always seems like a cool place. But again, I've never really... And it is a weirdly isolated for being so close to San Francisco. But, you know, probably also the downsides of it not being a real city.
Yeah, I think I have to increase my N because, like, frankly, I've only been there twice. And this last time, there were a variety of things that were pissing me off that were only partially due to the city of of Santa Cruz. And so, you know, we'll give it another shot at some point.
Fair enough.
So, anyway, should we start casting, start podding,
Let's
talking
do
about
it.
Our subjects?
Yeah, like, I mean, transportation-wise, how would you get to Santa Cruz?
You certainly wouldn't take Amtrak.
You wouldn't
if
take
they had Amtrak. An Amtrak, that would be nice. Wow. You can take one, Route 1.
You could take Amtrak. It would probably get you there faster than California's high-speed rail.
Well, that's for sure.
What's going on with California's high-speed rail? Is it not that high-speed, or does it just not exist?
I think, like, it's the last thing that happened. It was in that season of True Detective. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure they've made any progress on building a railroad.
I think Woody Harrelson is the one working on it.
Yeah. Once that season of True Detective came out, it was season two, and they were like, "This thing sucks. So there's no way we're making it now." It was terrible.
Well,
season three was good though.
Speaking of high speed rail, so there was this interview I found in Slate.com with the CEO of Amtrak. They talk about California's high-speed rail, which was kind of interesting. The interview is pretty good, and he was, you know, not as CEO-ish as you'd think. Like, he definitely dodged some questions and just didn't answer some things, and that was one of those things where they said, you know, what lessons have you learned from the whole California high-speed rail debacle? Sort of, it basically has ballooned in cost and pushed at the timeline out like 20 years, and no one's really sure if it's ever going to happen. And he's like, "Oh, we're always looking for lessons learned. We don't have any from that one." And it's like, okay.
And it's not an Amtrak. Like,
it's not. No, he's not involved with it. Yeah. He was saying lessons learned from like different projects that are going well or not well. But the interview in general was pretty interesting. So Amtrak turns 50 this April, which is kind of cool.
Looking good for 50, Amtrak.
Yeah, some of those trains are looking like they're about 50, but he was interviewed, his last name is Flynn, which I thought was kind of fun.
Billy Flynn.
He said, so he took over as CEO in April of 2020, which is not the greatest time to take over like transportation industry.
Didn't the last guy look like Monopoly guy or something? Like, I remember us like talking about him, and he was like wearing like a 3-piece suit, and it's just like was super old.
It's very possible. I don't remember.
All right. Anyway,
but so ridership was down 97% due to COVID last year. He's saying that he aims to double ridership from pre-COVID levels in the next two decades. So, you know, 20 years, that sort of makes sense. Most of that coming from like the 20 to 25 dense corridors where they don't have any service now, like Phoenix to Tucson, Flagstaff, Vegas to South California, Raleigh to Charlotte, Greensboro, Nashville to Atlanta, places like that where I guess it makes a lot of the problem with trains is they make a lot of sense if you're going like downtown Atlanta to downtown Nashville, but who's doing that? You're usually on the outskirts and you want to have a car when you get there.
I think it depends on where they put the stations. Like the best Amtrak's best corridor is the Northeast corridor, specifically like DC to New York and then even up New York to Boston. And that makes sense. It's very competitive. They can charge, it's very competitive with airlines. And because of that, they can charge high prices because people are going from the center of DC to
it makes perfect sense for New York and DC. Yeah.
But they could cite them. Like, one thing I don't like, and it's again, not an Amtrak project, but there's been talk of high-speed rail from LA to Vegas. That sounds fantastic. Like, if I can just get on a train from my house and be in Vegas.
Be gambling and, like, within a couple hours.
It could be a party train, right? And maybe it could even be like gambling on the train. Like, it could be a fun time. So the train station, I think, is in Lancaster, which I've lived in LA now 3 years. I'm still not... it might as well
really
be
a bad placement.
I'm not quite sure where it is, but it is so far outside of the center of the city. And I think part of the reason they're doing that is because it's privately funded, and that's they're just connecting like the two cheapest spots. It would be very expensive. I don't make up numbers, but like to go from Lancaster to Vegas might be the same price as going from Lancaster to downtown LA or to the west side of LA, because they're going through empty desert versus developed area. But I could see them putting, like, if you talk about, like, Nashville to Atlanta, they could put things, it wouldn't have to necessarily go all the way downtown. And even with the Northeast Corridor, people would use, like, BWI. A lot of people would get on and off because you could rent a car there if you wanted to rent a car. You could park a car there, long-term airport parking. Like, it was a good spot to get to. And there really wasn't much traffic. Like, BWI is a random airport in the middle of kind of nowhere. Maryland. It felt like.
Yeah, it was a little outside of the city. I had free parking there because I worked at Northrop, and that was our parking lot is attached to the airport. So it's fantastic for me.
I mean, even if they put it in the center of that city, you'd still be going to Baltimore, which is pretty much the middle of nowhere as far as I'm concerned. Unless you like Heron, and then it's great.
So speaking of the Northeast Corridor, he also talked about this Gateway project, which is the new tunnel between New York, New Jersey, under the Hudson. Estimated cost, are you guys looking at this, or do you want to guess how much it costs?
I saw it and I'm familiar with the project.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, I did want to ask you.
Tell me what it is.
It's $11 billion. So
this is like a hole that goes, and we've already built two of them, so we know how to do it, right?
Well, the problem is we built them 100 years ago when everything's literally really cheap and easier to do.
So $5 billion a mile, and quite a bit more expensive than comparable projects. But, you know, that's the thing is, like, you just mentioned LA, like, it's New York City, like, it's the Hudson. You can't even probably, it's not like you can dredge it. There's constant traffic up and down that river. So it's hard. I mean, and understandably so. And then you got to, you know, connect it into New York City. That's not going to be easy, but it's a lot of money. It is necessary, but that the tunnels they're using now were literally built 100 years ago. So the fact that they're still operating just fine is kind of amazing.
That was like not just fine. I think that's the problem.
Well, the problem, like so many things, there is so much work going on in specifically in that area now, because everything, it just like has all pushed to the end of its useful life. And even the things that are 100 years old now, like when they built them, they're like, this will probably last like 75, 80 years. Then we should replace it. And now it's like, they just keep deferring it. Eventually there could be something catastrophic. It's great that it's still working, but they're like,
they keep coming out with those sprays that you can put on like the boats so that they don't have holes in them. So that's sort of innovation. That's obviously going to make it so that the tunnel lasts longer.
It is. I mean, that's exactly what they do though. It's kind of crazy. Cause it's too expensive. We don't want to rebuild. We don't want to, and it's just too expensive. And then something terrible is going to happen. And you're going to hear everyone say, we should have done it. That was so stupid. Yeah, but we always wait until something bad happens.
Even if you leave the loss of life aside for a minute, can you imagine the fucking chaos if Holland Tunnel or Lincoln Tunnel is just like,
closed.
It's not available anymore.
No.
Like, you better get a bunch of boats. How fast can you build boats?
It's already terrible. Like, and even, you know, during COVID, I was driving back and forth through New York. It was wonderful when no one was on the street, and now it is completely back to normal. Like Saturday afternoon, you're sitting in traffic through the tunnel. It's pretty bad. But I can't imagine if one of the two tunnels went down.
One of the things that like does make sense for rail, just like your point before, Jeff, is like, hey, what holds you back? It's like, well, when I get to this new city, I need to have a car available to me, right? And it's like, well, with Uber, Lyft, autonomous vehicles, all these things coming on, you could say that like it makes rail more useful. And one of the reasons that like rail makes sense in like DC and New York space, one, besides the fact that driving around in New York is a fucking nightmare. But the comparable of like if I was going to fly from DC to New York, well, if I was going to drive, it's like, what, 3.5 hours without traffic before you hit that tunnel that you can't get through. And then if I'm going to fly, it's like I got to spend an hour and a half going through security for a 15-minute flight, which seems insane. Or I could just get on the stupid train, and it's probably more convenient in a variety of ways.
So I just randomly read an article today on the Points Guy where some guy, like one of their, whatever, reporters, I don't know what they call those guys, he took a flight to Boston, New York to Boston. He took a flight on Spirit Airlines, and then he took the train back, and he timed them both to see, you know, which one was faster.
Door to door, yeah.
Door to door. He didn't do it door to door, which kind of bothered me. He did it like as the train was leaving, and as the train was leaving to the airport, and as the train was leaving, you know, the actual train he was taking. Like, anyway, besides him having terrible methodology because he's a travel reporter and not, anyway, quantitative. So the flight took him 3 hours and 40 minutes. And he was, you know, he had to go from train to air train to flight, then to taxi or bus to get out of the airport. And then he was
get molested by a TSA agent.
Well, Batman versus Superman on the bus with a homeless drunk man. So 3 hours and 40 minutes, I think it was. He took the train and it took 3 hours and 45 minutes. And his conclusion was, well, if I'm in a hurry, I'll fly.
The benefit is a single seat ride, like, right? That's the
he said you turn off,
you get in the quiet car, put on your headphones, like watch a movie, read a book, you're done.
Bigger
like,
seat,
it's wonderful.
Nobody's coming around to tell you to buckle up and put up your seat back. Or
he said he still preferred the flight, which I was like, I don't understand how you could prefer the flight. I mean, maybe he's just because he's a travel blogger. That's what he likes to do. But like, it seemed like much worse. I mean, yeah.
And you said a Spirit Airline flight.
Yeah.
Like, something's seriously wrong here.
Well, it was recently. So like the airplane was maybe not full. So maybe that's why. But yeah, no, like he got on the train, took it for, you know, 20 minutes, got off the train, got on a monorail, got off the monorail, went through security, got on the plane, and he's like, that was better than getting on the train and just falling asleep for 4 hours. Like, I don't understand how that was better.
I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense.
City to city, train is just much better. And the fact that they're 5 minutes apart or difference, it's like, train every time.
Well, I've even taken like to contrast it with driving in the Northeast Corridor, like the bus services were reasonable, like a Bolt bus or Mega bus or any of those. And they were really cheap. The problem you hit, it took like from DC to a tunnel or a bridge was like 3 hours. And then to get into Manhattan was like another hour and a half. And that Amtrak already has a dedicated tunnel. So sometimes you slow down there and that's obviously they're looking to replace that and there's issues there, but you're not like waiting with everybody else that's trying to get into Manhattan. There's no traffic you're getting with.
I mean, even I've told you guys have heard this story before, but when I used to have to fly into New York City, because Bryn was living in New York City and I was living in Pittsburgh, the way that I would do this would be on a Friday. I would leave work early, drive from downtown to the airport in Pittsburgh, 25 minutes. I would have like a 6 p.m. flight or something. But there was a flight that would leave for New York every 30 minutes. So I just walk up to the gate that had the next one. You got room on this one? Yeah. Yep. Get right on.
Yeah.
Like wheels up. Like the whole total flight was 40 minutes maybe. Wheels down. And then we would be on the tarmac in LaGuardia for an hour and a half waiting for other planes to get out of the way.
Yeah. Sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So awesome. In that same slightly vein, the other thing I wanted to mention from this interview was he brought up the freight railroad stuff. So I think we've talked about this before, but freight railroads basically own the entire rail system.
Network,
Amtrak runs on their system. And so Sean and I took that cross-country train, and one of the problems was there was a freight train broken down in front of us. We sat there for, what, like 6 hours or something ridiculous?
Yeah, it was a significant delay.
Now, given it was a 52-hour train, so like we had our own bedrooms, so we didn't really care that much.
10% increase in time.
But yeah, still. But so that's one of the things holding back high-speed rails, because there's all these freight trains and it's their rail. They don't really care that much about Amtrak. That was always my theory, and he sort of validated this. So he said freight railroads, because they're allowed to operate and own all of this rail, the government has mandated that they have to carry passengers. They have to allow for passenger travel. The way they have gotten around allowing for passenger travel, because they don't actually carry passengers, is offloading that completely to Amtrak. So they said, okay, Amtrak can use the rail system. We don't have to deal with passengers at all. They'll handle that. Now,
but we'll just make it terrible, so there's not that many.
Well, so they are legally obligated per the statute to give Amtrak the right of way, and they have not been doing that. And he blatantly said they have not been doing that. The guy says, it sounds like you're contending that they not really lived up to their end of the bargain. He said, yes, that is right.
it's very ambiguous.
Yeah, exactly.
The answer.
So, you know, and it seems like he's going to push that and make it. I think passenger rail in general is becoming a higher priority in this country and government in general. And hopefully we'll see some real changes there. I mean, it would be great if we had some real high-speed rail between some of these, even East Coast cities, if not West Coast cities.
And he's only going up against like one of the richest men in the world, so he'll probably do all right being Warren Buffett in getting him to give them priority access.
Yeah, that's true. That's the problem, is like they just really don't seem like they give a shit, the freight people. Like,
Do they talk at all about the what energy goes into pushing these guys around? Because I know that Sean mentioned that one of the biggest pushers of coal is freight rail, because they use more coal than like basically anybody.
I'm not sure they use the coal, but they ship the coal.
Yeah.
And they probably like
the coal. Oh, they ship the coal. That's right.
Yeah.
They usually, I think it's mostly, there's a lot of electric around like the major corridors. And but then most of the rest of the country is diesel engines.
It's supposed to be like incredibly efficient. Like CSX used to run commercials. Yeah. I forget what it was, but they would just quote some huge number of like.
Well, you see these trains. I mean, you see the freight trains. We hiked this trail overlooking the Hudson River, upstate New York, a year or two ago, and you see this freight train coming along. And you're like, God damn, that thing. It's like miles long of these cars, and there's just like two engines at the front. So, yeah, per pound, it's probably extremely efficient, even if they are diesel.
That's probably part of the problem, too, with like coordinating freight logistics. Like they don't want to start or stop. They just want to keep it rolling.
Right.
And it's not moving very fast. So when you've got a passenger train that's coming through and maybe is off schedule or there are like the schedules don't align, it's probably not all that easy to adjust them. And I even know like the way the high speed trains work, like there's issues with tilting, because a lot they'll have like parallel tracks, but you could run two parallel high speed trains because they would tilt similarly. But a freight train isn't moving very fast, so it doesn't tilt, so it could just like knock into.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like they'll end up going, even if they can get around them, they end up going significantly slower in a lot of those areas. And like you said, they're very long trains, so you're going a long time at a slow speed.
Yeah, I don't know what the solution there is, but I feel like there needs to be one at some point. I mean, rail just seems like a better form of transportation than flying a 40-minute flight and waiting an hour and a half to get off the tarmac.
Yeah. Well, even I would look at it like I would do work trips, and it was hard. Acela would often be like $400, almost $500 round trip from DC to New York. You could find a flight for like $130 round trip. Like,
right.
It was kind of hard to justify. And the overall time difference wasn't that great. It was just a big convenience factor to get on. I could take the metro to the train station, get on that, be in Midtown, take the subway to where I need to go.
If you can get $450, why can't you run another train? I guess there's just not room on the tracks.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, That's the thing that doesn't make sense. The demand is there, jackholes.
Like, I think they're operating.
Sell them for $300 and double the fucker.
The best, the most capacity they can. They're also constrained though too, like when people want to travel. Like there's the physical space constraint, but people want to travel between like 6 and 9.
Slap
in the morning.
Slap a car on the back.
Yeah. I think all the Acelas were only sized because they're like high speed. They're they have like a engine on the locomotive on the front and the back, and then it's I think 6 cars, and that's like that's a design. That's the so max. It's not like
there's too many constraints.
Yeah,
we gotta workshop this. I got a whiteboard. We'll figure this out by next episode.
I'm thinking about that new Acela train. I wonder if that was any longer. Remember we saw those? We talked about those like a month or
year ago. We did. Fuck everything. We're going 6 cars, 7, 8 cars.
Going to 5 blades.
that was a reference to the Onion article about the 5-blade Gillette razor. If you've never read that article, you need to go Google that and read it because it's brilliant.
What about electric trucks and stuff, Sean?
Yeah. So Canoe recently revealed its electric truck. For those not familiar, Canoe's an electric vehicle manufacturer, relatively new. I think just recently went public, based in LA.
Ticker's Go EV.
Ticker's Go EV. Clever for getting people into it. So they released a truck, and I think we've talked about on here before, Rivian, who has a truck, Cybertruck, who has a truck. I looked at the Go EV or the Canoe one interested me because their platform, we can talk about this, is essentially like this skateboard you could build anything on top of. They've come out with a couple models, and this is the third model they've revealed. None of them are in like, production models available for consumers yet, but they're targeting working on that. They also have been working on like delivery vehicles for last mile delivery, but all are based on this kind of skateboard platform. I recently saw a video of this and sent it around to you guys, and I thought it was like it's definitely uglier than the Rivian, but interests me more, and maybe slightly prettier than the Cybertruck, depending on your style, desire.
I could see an argument either way.
It's not the most aesthetically like amazing car. I think Rivian gets that, but it just the way that they've gone about designing it, I think, is so cool because everything is basically modular. Like you build on top of this platform. They show in the reveal video that we'll put in the show notes, like the guy's like, oh, the steering wheel's here, but you can just push it here or move it out of the way because there's no steering column. It doesn't matter where it is. It's just a drive-by-wire steering wheel that they need to put it somewhere so you can steer the car, but you could put it. They show like the skateboard going in the Bonneville Salt Flats. The guy's sitting up front with the steering wheel at the front, and then he moves it to the back. Like it's just it's so modular.
Well, that's the
thing.
It just
seems like a really cool design
that I thought was very cool about this. So for people who haven't seen it, it basically looks like the front half of a VW bus and the back half of a pickup, essentially. But the coolest, they seem to design this particular pickup during the unveiling video. They heavily emphasize like contractors. And so it was basically like a tradespeople, people that work out of their truck. It was like a truck with every possible accessory already built in, like fold down everything. Like the side of the bed folds down so you can use it as a desk. The front of the car folds down and you could use it as like a desk or like a bar if you were tailgating.
Front gating. Like, I like how they created that term for it. It's not tailgate anymore. It's front gating. You've got like chargers and plugs and a bar area.
They were like, there could be 4 seats. There could be 2 seats. There could be 3 seats. You could like mix them as much as you want. Like it really does look like the idea of this platform where you can really just literally do anything. And then even within the pickup platform, it seems like you buy this thing, even set up however you want to set it up, and you still have a million options, right? Like there's lights in the bed, there's tie down straps in the bed, like in every place imaginable. Like
all the little compartments, like they were trying to sell it as a something for like a contractor or handyman or plumber or somebody like that. Like it's just like the walls of the truck bed just open up and can be like a step or store your tools there or just very
it was a very cool idea.
They like kind of thought through what people might actually want, and they're not, it doesn't seem like they're constrained by that. It's not like, I'm sure there's an F-150 that has something like that, but there's the contractor model of the F-150 that maybe has those features.
Well, that's the thing. You buy an F-150 for that, right? And you generally like will buy like a one without a bed, and then you'll put on a special, you know, modular thing with all the fold down toolboxes and stuff. And that's great. And that works. But this is like, you just buy the same thing and you can make it your own in a way. All of them have all of that stuff already, which was pretty cool. You know, I also, this kind of goes into a bigger discussion of like the commoditization of vehicles, I think, where it really, I think everyone's like spurred on by Tesla specifically because they're the first new car company in 100 years or whatever it is. But with the skateboard concept, it's like China's going to be pumping out these skateboards and people are just going to buy them and slap different,
put whatever you want on it.
Yeah. Whatever you want.
That's, so they've got five models shown on their website. One is called the Canoe, their first model. It's essentially, they call it a lifestyle vehicle. It's essentially like a minivan. The second one is a multi-purpose delivery vehicle, MPDV, that's for last mile delivery. The truck we've been talking about. Then they've got something that looks, they don't say what it is yet, but it looks like a sedan. And the last model is the skateboard. And they just call it B2B. And it reminds me of when we were talking about like Apple Car. They were looking for a Foxconn to build them a car. Like, right. This is a thing. Like, if you're Apple and you want a car, presumably like Canoe goes through and gets it somehow like certified, crash tested, like road, like street legal. But then they've just got this platform for you that they could build for you. Maybe other third party providers can build. Like, it just seems like it's so.
Yeah. You just order, it's like you used to be able to, well, you still can, but you could build your own computer. It's like the same thing. You just build your own car.
Yeah.
Just slap some doors on, pick your doors.
Well,
pick a weird hood thing. We got one of those. Yeah.
And for like consumers, it could be fun, but like thinking about it as like, okay, so like a contractor buys this one because it's got all the shit the contractor has. Like all of a sudden he's got a desk out in the field and it power plugs everywhere he needs them. And then if you're, whatever, a van lifer, you got that one. And if you're a family, you got this other interesting concept that could be completely different, you know? And it's all, you can buy cars from like all these niche car companies now. And it's not just Ford putting out the thing that's going to appeal to the masses, which has always been the disappointment with the big three, right? It's like they come out with these concept cars that look all cool and sexy. And then when they're going to sell them, they water them down.
I wonder if like Canoe is going to be able to, there's got to be some economies of scale to like producing things. And that's why like the model, Model T had just like Henry Ford's famous quote about, you can get it in any color you want as long as it's black. Like there was a reason for that because that was the way to make it the most affordable. When you start customizing it, I've got to imagine that ads costs, they haven't talked about it that much in their, or highlighted that in the video, they seem to make it sound like it's pretty price competitive. But Jeff, you said a few times somebody can buy one, and I'm not sure that that's the case.
What do you mean?
I think they're all, like, from what I can tell, they're still on a subscription model.
Oh,
so
are they?
You can't purchase a vehicle from them. You purchase a subscription from them.
No, I don't think so. I think they have three models. You can buy, you can Canoe, which I guess is like the subscription thing.
Okay.
You can lease or you can own it. So there's three do it like you wants on the website as far as I can tell.
Okay. So I didn't realize they were still doing that because I had seen them originally and it was the minivan one that was supposed to be like, hey, you have a subscription and you take it whenever you need it. Like, I don't know how they were supposed to get it to you, but
So that's the Canoe, the passenger vehicle. Because I was confused on the truck. The guy in the video that was, I think, involved in designing it kept saying, like, we're very interested in the resale value. That's something that we think a lot of car companies don't pay attention to, but is important, especially if you're like a business and you're buying this truck. You might use it for 5 years. It's got some depreciable value you'd write off, but then you could sell that again to somebody else or use it going forward. But then I went to their website and I was trying to find out, like, clearly they don't sell anything yet. So there's no pricing. There's no business model. You can't do anything, but they talk about their membership. they do mention like there's an FAQ that I posted in the our outline.
You know what?
Here
I take it back, Sean. I apologize. Mm. They have a very difficult to read chart.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's it's. Yeah. I don't think they've decided yet. They're like, yeah, maybe you can. Like,
I think that's probably the case.
Yeah,
it feels like they've tried three business models already, and they still mm-hmm. have yet to do anything. And eventually, yeah. hopefully, they'll do something because I do think it's kind of a cool model.
Well, yeah, I think their innovation or their value add here is like the skateboard platform, and right. since, yeah. but they're still not quite sure what to do with that or how to bring it to market, and they're probably going to test things and figure it out. I kind of wondered if they wanted to retain ownership of it just because it was so modular that if you owned it, like you could just do anything to it, and then they might lose control over the quality of the product. It just might be a lot harder for them to manage if people are just taking building whatever they want on that platform if they actually owned it and could modify it.
I think some of these companies are getting a little ahead of themselves, Tesla included, where they're thinking, like Tesla, you can lease a vehicle, but when at the end of the lease, they don't sell it to you. Like there's no option to buy it because they're like, oh, because of robo-taxis and auto driver, full self-driving, it's going to be worth so much that we don't even want to sell it to you. Well, bullshit. Yeah,
that's awesome.
There's none of them are operating as robo-taxis, so that's not true. But it's sort of, I feel like they're kind of maybe thinking the same thing. Like I felt like their first model, Canoe's first business model was, well, the cars are going to drive themselves. So they'll just drive them to you when you need them. And then you'll drive it around and then you'll be done and it'll just drive away. Well, yeah, sure. That might happen in 10 or 20 years, but it's certainly not happening anytime soon. So until then, what's the business model? And a lot of these, especially EV companies, are just thinking out into the future, which I think is wonderful, but legally that can't happen anytime soon. So they do kind of need to come up with a model that works in between.
Well, that I did like in their subscription model, it really is, it's like, do you want a car this month? And you could just sign up. I'm sure they do different pricing for the terms, but you're like, oh, I might just need a car for a few months and then I don't need it for a while. So you're just leasing month to month and you decide when you don't want it. The logistics of that are probably more challenging with the cars not being able to drive themselves anywhere in the near term, that somebody would have to pick it up and drop it off. But they do look like I think the chart you were looking at, Mike, is like contrasting the different ownership models. And they're saying Canoe,
yes,
they offer essentially everything. It's like we pay for the registration, the maintenance, the charging, the car, and your insurance. Like everything is just in a bundled single price. I think that's smart. It could also be a little bit, it's probably hard, just like EVs were when they first came out, to tell people it's like, oh, this car costs $10,000 more, but you'll be saving all this money in gas and maintenance. And people aren't, it's harder for them to think of that. If they can see, I'll get a car for $200 a month and there's hidden costs of another $400 a month in insurance, maintenance, gas. It's hard when you see it all rolled up. If a Canoe comes in and says, oh, ours is only $500 a month, people don't always do the math to figure out what's their true cost of ownership or leasing the vehicle.
Yeah, I think Volvo is already doing that. Mm-hmm. Not the like total month-to-month thing, but you essentially sign up for their program and you can just change out your car. Like I'm sure there's
Porsche has one like that too.
Well, oh, do they?
And so does Cadillac. But it's like it's absurd. Oh, yeah. It's like $1,000 a month.
I think it's like if you're it reminds me, remember in the episode of Better Call Saul where he gets a job at like the real law firm and they get him a car and all that? Like that seems to be especially like Cadillac. It's like, oh, you're getting a corporate fleet vehicle. Just pick whatever you want for this month. But if you're a guy that's trying to save some money on a car, that's probably not the way you're going to.
Well, no, but there probably is a lot of stuff rolled up into it too. So maybe it's not quite as expensive as it initially sounds, although $1,000 a month is expensive no matter what.
I don't know. I think like when I look at, you mentioned, Sean, these Canoes look like they're minivans, like in like the base model. I think they're very much like the VW buses, and mm-hmm. like there are, if you've seen old VW buses, if you haven't, you can go check out Mike with VWs and SF mm-hmm. as the hashtag on Instagram.
Who's buying that NFT?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Who's buying that? It's a great call. There's a ton of variations of like the traditional VW bus. Like there is a pickup truck version of the VW bus. There's a ton of customized interiors. Like, so like to me, it's very reminiscent of that, that you can just kind of drag and drop the doors and the things that you want on it. And the other thing that you guys mentioned that I thought was interesting was the cost of customization. And it's like one of the things that the reasons like, hey, if you just want it in black or whatever for Ford, that makes it super efficient to run your line. So if you're not running a million different things, have a dealership network, you don't have to deal with like the inventory load, which is what makes it really expensive because you have all this capital deployed and you're waiting to sell through like the burnt Sienna orange one. Like it might, that might right. not sell for 5 years. Whereas if some guy's just like, yeah, I want burnt Sienna, then they just plunk that thing off the line and spray paint it. And you know, the only capital you have is like the burnt Sienna paint that you had to have to, or they have to wait 6 weeks to, for you to get all the crap the way that you want it. So I think if you have some innovations in manufacturing where you can, you know, you're, it's basically like you could do something like the fucking Qdoba of cars, or I guess Chipotle would be the more popular way to say it, and where you're just cranking out.
Oh, like, sorry, guys. We were the Qdoba of cars. Didn't quite make it.
The Chipotle of cars, where you just have like, hey, this is where I go for my door bucket. This is where I go for my flatbed bucket. And you can, all you have to do is crank out like whatever the orders are a month ahead. Then it could be interesting.
And you could separate out like the manufacturing, right? So if someone's making these skateboard things and selling them to 10 different car companies, they're just cranking out those skateboards just for as cheap as they can do it. They don't need paint. They don't need anything. And these other, you know, final sales type people can put on the colors and do all the fancy stuff for a very specific industry.
And that sort of reminds me of like when you are breaking out the component pieces of this, right? Where it's interesting, like that guy's going to be super efficient because all he's doing is the skateboards. The door guy's going to be super efficient because he's just doing doors. One of my favorite weird discoveries of manufacturing was when I was doing an internship at Dial, and we were trying to pick a bottle for this product that I was, you know, leading the introduction of as my project, which was
Dial ketchup,
liquid color safe bleach, Purox 2, liquid value color safe bleach. So cheap color safe bleach for Purex 2. And one of the things that I discovered was the company that makes the bottle is different than the company that makes the cap. And you're like, how the hell does that make any effing sense?
No,
it's just like obviously you're going to want, if you're going to have a bottle, you need a cap. Like it might as well be the same place, but the stupid machinery and even the type of plastic that you have to have for like the squishy bottle versus the hard cap, it's different plastic, it's different machinery, it's different stuff. So yeah, it's two different companies. One's called IO, it's nuts. But it makes sense because that cap company is really good at making caps.
They make a lot of caps, I bet. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a pretty funny.
Better than that bottle blowing company is.
You talk to some guy at like a cocktail party and he's like, yeah, I make caps.
I make the caps.
I make a ton of caps for all sorts
bottles?
Of different bottles.
No, I'm not one of those bottle assholes. I'm a cap guy.
God, that's freaking insulting. How could you?
Anybody can make a bottle. A bottle needs a cap or it's worthless.
Yeah. 6 minute abs. You can't even break a sweat in 6 minutes.
Do you guys see this picture I just pasted? That's what I feel like I'm underselling being a minivan, because nice. It looks like, it reminds me of a B-52 bomber, like World War II era bomber, like the cockpit area where it's just all glass. And I think I read somewhere it says it has 22 windows. Essentially, the entire top of the van is windows.
To describe what Sean just shared, it's an interior shot of a van, and it's effectively like, if you've ever been on an Amtrak car in the, what do they call it, the observation car?
Yeah.
The windows kind of like curve up over the top and you get these views. And that's what this has. But also the whole top is like a sunroof, basically. So it's basically all glass and it's pretty cool. It's like you're in like a what would they call that? Like with the plants?
Oh, yes. Greenhouse.
Greenhouse. Yeah, it's like a greenhouse, only it's a car. Yeah, which is maybe not great on a hot day.
Well, that's the thing.
The window's open, but
probably tint it.
The Teslas always all have glass roofs now. And like the whole thing's a glass. It's not even like a big moon roof. And that always confuses me because it's like, yeah, I would think that would get uncomfortable, but I guess they just tint it heavily and it's fine. I don't know. Driving in my Jeep, if I have the roof off, the first it's thing hot. That bothers me is damn sun's in my eyes no matter what. Yeah. So, yeah, anyway.
So, you know, electric cars, that's the future. Any problems you can see with that there, Jeff?
You know, funny you mention it. I can see one particular issue is the gas tax no longer applies.
And what is the gas tax?
So, generally, and maybe Sean knows more about this than I do in terms of like how this all works out, but taxes for gas are generally then applied to the transportation industry, right? So you get to fix the roads, fix the highways. I don't know exactly how that all flows through because it's a state thing, right? Is there a federal gas tax?
Anything that's like designated federal highway, which could be like interstate highway, for example. So Interstate 80, like they would get federal funding. They might have local funding, but if you were building a project in I-80 in New Jersey or in California, it might be 80 or 90% federally funded and 10% locally funded. So there's like a flow through of that. And the gas tax does generate, I guess you call it like earmarked revenue for the transportation infrastructure. And then there's also just money that will come out of other like general fund or non-dedicated funding. But the big issue with gas tax, I think it was it was smart when they first did it. They came up with like, they're like, okay, well, if we tax who's using the roads, so people that are buying gas, we'll put a tax on the gas. But I think the problem, the criticism the entire time I've worked has been, I think it was sometime in the early 90s was the last time they actually increased the tax.
Oh, really?
On it, and it's not
at a federal level. States change it all the time.
At the federal level,
and states can tack additional gas tax on.
The federal tax is set not as you would think that could be okay. You wouldn't have to change it if you set it as like a percentage of the price of gas. It would go up as inflation goes up, but they set it as like a dollar or cents per gallon tax.
Yeah. Right.
So like whenever it was in the early 90s, a gallon of gas might have cost like under a dollar.
Yeah. 90 cents.
The tax. So I think the tax, here it says in this article, like 18 cents per gallon. So that it was a significant tax at the time. And now gas is like $3-4. So it's, it's still 18 cents a gallon.
Right. So it should be, on a percentage basis, 3X, right? And that's even leaving alone what the actual driver should be, which is it's supposed to cover the cost of building the effing road. Right. So how much did the increase in the road construction cost?
Right, right. That would just be keeping
and usage.
Up with like general CPI.
Oh,
Yeah. So like that kind of worked, well, I guess other than that issue of like them just designing it
kind of worked, but we were just talking about all those tunnels and bridges that are crumbling in New York because they don't have the money to pay for them for the last.
But what
years.
Worked about it was that the tax is borne by the people utilizing the road, right? And so it is. There's not like a big negative externality of like free riders. It's just like the way we implemented it was stupid in a different way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's at least a more direct taxation of users. But now what's being proposed, and I guess it's been proposed for a long time, but maybe actually being implemented is like a per mile gas tax. And I think when they first did this, you couldn't really track like mileage was probably a lot more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To track, especially within a certain jurisdiction, like a state or a county or, even within a country, you could see people going over borders, so you couldn't just look at the odometer readings. You'd have to actually come up with a better way to track mileage use. But that's the best, I think, in general, people seem to think that's the best way to tax, is like tax the people that are using it.
Well, and with the EV thing, I mean, that is, to some extent, it's going to be an issue, right? In the future, as California bans all internal combustion engines or for new car sales in the next decade. The EV owners won't have to pay any taxes to keep the road infrastructure. As much as I'd love to just buy a Tesla now and not pay taxes, that'd be great. But like eventually that'll lead to problems.
Kind of like roads. Well, that I was thinking about it because it frustrates me as somebody that works in this industry, and I'm sure there's cases other places. But you think about like a car manufacturer, and we can pick on the big three. Like they've created a product that essentially it relies on a really good roadway network for it to be worth anything. People wouldn't buy it.
Yeah.
But they literally did absolutely nothing to develop that. And I guess you could say similarly, like tax company or not tech companies.
They did nothing. They didn't build. I'm sorry. Did you not see Roger Rabbit? They dismantled the rail car.
Yeah. The stupid railroads would be everywhere if they didn't take care of that.
Exactly.
Four lanes from LA to Pasadena.
Yeah, four lanes seems like trivial now. I think the highway near my parents' place in Florida is expanding from just, like five to seven lanes.
In Florida, ridiculous. They've made some of their highways are like as wide as you can make them without like people don't know what to do if it gets beyond like eight lanes wide. It's just like beyond our ability to process and comprehend.
Yeah. Well, I rented a Tahoe one time when I was down there and I was like, I got into the thing. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like I can't, it is like driving just like a freaking tanker ship. Like it's so freaking big. And so I'm trying to pull out of the, you know, garage and it seems like it's so massive. And then I get on the highway and I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, I don't care how big this thing is because there's room everywhere. There's like, you know, meanwhile, you drive through New York and the lanes are like exactly the width of a compact car.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's a little bit more.
That's when you really notice because like we rented that pickup truck that one time when we went to Tahoe.
Yeah.
And it's like, the guy dropped the pickup truck off in front of my house. And I was like, where am I going to park this?
Yeah.
Like, this literally does not fit in a parking space anywhere in San Francisco. Yeah. And then as soon as you get on the highway, you're like, it's fine. Yeah. It doesn't really matter. You got a driveway. Who gives a crap?
Yeah,
you
know? Who cares? But it makes a lot more sense to tax this stuff by the mile. I think with the technology, you know, Oregon and Utah are launching the first programs. They're actually pushing forward with pilot programs of this. I'm not exactly sure how it all works. Like, obviously, you need to measure the miles and the miles driven within the state. And then people are worried about privacy issues, which understandable, although we do have the technology to kind of not worry about this stuff if you trust whoever's monitoring it. Although, even then, I don't know.
But it's still like... It's not a good, I understand the privacy concerns, but it's not like just don't use the roads if you're that worried about it, right?
Well,
like
that's, there you go. Like, true. It's a public thing.
People seem to like it. Like,
right. Yeah, that's a good point. So it's going to need to go to that. It has to, because there's no more gas. The funny thing about these debates is you got some people kind of burying their head in the sand, pretending politicians, pretending like, we don't need to move forward. The gas tax is just fine. Don't worry about it. And you're like, well, you're going to need to worry about it at some point, like, because gas isn't going to be a thing eventually. So why not start thinking about it now? But, you know, it's hard, so they don't want to.
Well, nobody likes to raise the concept of tax. Like, that doesn't look good for anyone. And this is definitely, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think it's necessary because of the shift away from gasoline. Like, if that's what you're taxing to fund roadways and cars stop using it, then you can see the end is in sight. Like they're going to run out of money, but you'll have, I mean, today you've got people that don't use gas and drive on the roads. So there you've got a free rider problem.
Yeah.
Who's that? Busk people?
No, anybody with an electric vehicle.
Oh, I see. EVs. Yeah.
And bus people. Those.
And bus people. These are bus people. Blame them.
And there's a lot of people that live on the roads in San Francisco. And they don't. They don't pay those taxes.
Somebody sent me an article, or maybe it came away somewhere, where last year there were 10,000 complaints to the city about feces on the streets of San Francisco, human feces. It was in one of the WhatsApp groups. Yeah.
Did you see that guy got arrested for corruption? The head of the poop patrol.
The head of the poop patrol. Yeah.
The title was he didn't do shit, and now he's being arrested for corruption, which is pretty accurate because it doesn't seem like it should be. I think I've told this story before, but I think it was the day before I was leaving San Francisco. I walked to one of my favorite coffee shops, La Boulangerie in Hayes Valley. I loved that place before Starbucks bought it. Then Starbucks bought it and ruined it and shut it down. And then the guy opened up the exact same place with the exact same awning, same name with like a, what was it, like La Boulange? I think it was La Boulange. And now he's like La Boulangerie. And it was the same writing. It was like same store.
Just stuck it to him.
I just I love that he's just like, F it. We're doing this, seeing if they sue us. But walking back.
That guy pooped in the street.
Right down Hayes, like it was early, so no one was really out. It was like 7 a.m. And I was walking down like the middle of Hayes Valley, which is like, you know, pretty, there's a lot of shops. It's like a main street area.
Downtown. It's a nice little district, shopping district. Nice little neighborhood. Shopping street. High street.
There is this dude just having issues taking a shit. Like it was like he was struggling through it in the middle of the sidewalk. Not on the side of the sidewalk, not behind a tree.
Yeah.
In the middle of the sidewalk. And I'm just like, I just walked around him. He didn't care. He didn't bat an eye that someone else was there. It was like he was just in his own private bathroom. And I'm like, oh, this is so perfect. This is just perfect for the day.
For the last.
So you're proposing there should be like a poop tax? Is that?
No, maybe just like some way to stop that from happening. I don't really know.
I mean, San Francisco, and to its defense, has a number of fairly reasonable, nice, well-maintained public toilets.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of cities don't do. Or speaking of Starbucks too, they were getting in trouble for that, and now they've decided to not be so selective with who can use their bathroom. But
well, that's the funny part about San Francisco, and that's our friend Nico came and visited us, and he's like, yeah, I saw some guy urinating in the middle of the day on the sidewalk of Market Street, and he's like, there was a restroom, a public restroom within half a block. Like the guy could have gone there.
Well, you know, when you've made, some of these people have made a choice to live on the street or like to do drugs rather than do something else, whether however you want to phrase that addiction and whether the choice is there. So rational decision making maybe doesn't apply at that point.
It's true.
It's just like, this is where I am. It's an unfortunate situation which needs a solution, which we will not solve today, but we can make some recommendations.
Next week, though, we'll solve it. Yeah.
Next week.
Probably. Recommendations.
My recommendation has nothing to do with feces, which I'm very excited about. In fact, it's the opposite of what most technology is, which is feces. I'm recommending Webflow.com and one specific plugin that I use with Webflow, which is JetBoost.io. It's pretty great.
JetBoost. That sounds like a laundry detergent product, too, talking about.
Definitely. Yeah, there's definitely a Jet dish detergent.
Yeah, we make the caps for Webflow and JetBoost, you know, all the big ones.
No bottles.
No bottles, though.
I've probably talked about Webflow before because when I first came across it, I was impressed by it, but I continue to be impressed by it. As I use the features more. So here's like my take on web design in general. You have a variety of systems. You can, at the most sophisticated level, you can be writing custom HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and you know, do whatever you want. You have to be pretty good at that, and you should be doing it for a while.
Flash.
Like it's just easy to screw up. It's hard, like to really CSS and like have things. You need to know how to code. And if you know how to do it, you have to, a lot of practice to do it well. Then there's like, oh, let me just grab something off the shelf, and there's a variety of like WYSIWYG type things to do.
WYSIWYG stands for
what you see is what you get. So it means like, hey, you put this picture here on the screen, you drag it with your mouse, that's where the picture is going to end up, right? And like, they're pretty good. They're a little limiting. You don't have total control. And then there's like things that have like templates, like Squarespace, which kind of sucks because if you want to do anything outside of their template, it's useless.
If you want to set up a blog, it's amazing. But if you want to do anything else,
it's pretty crappy, right? Webflow is cool because it's like, two clicks down from having to know HTML and CSS, like you need to know enough. I know enough of what those things are. I've like, you know, watched videos. So like I get the concepts, but it's like, if you want something to move over like padding, you don't have to go into the code and like type padding exactly and follow the syntax. You just move a little slider over and it changes the padding on the elements. So it's like really nice, like depth of control without like all of the
syntax
frustrating elements of coding. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's got amazing documentation, training, and plugins. And that's the part that's really great about it. Their like Webflow University is hilarious. Like, it just has a super sarcastic guy who explains everything about it in 3-minute videos. And
I like that.
It's like, it's just so well documented for you to figure stuff out. Yeah, and I love it. And then JetBoost is this thing that we use that is thrown on top of Webflow that helps you. Like, we were building this collection of all of these food vendors for Dashy Dash. And you just like, hey, I want to be able to use a search bar on this, but not have them go to a new page and have a search results thing. It's like, oh, you want dynamic search that just filters this? No problem. Just throw this on. And that thing is amazingly well documented with 17-second videos for every single step. Like, do this, dummy. Hit this button to check if it worked. It worked. Do this next step, dummy. Hit this button to check if it worked. It worked. Webflow and JetBoost. They're great. Check them out.
I like it. Mine, also internet-related. Did you guys know you could group tabs together in Chrome?
I just saw that this weekend.
Yeah.
Tell me how I do it.
It's
just highlight them together?
You right-click on any tab. You click add tab to group or like whatever, new tab. Add Nightmare. Tab to group. You select a group. You color code it. And then bunch of tabs are then all color coded, and it's quite nice. Like
that is not going to help me.
I liked it, but I wondered, like,
no,
how would you guys use it? Normally, I would open a new browser window if I was really grouping things, because I find it like once I get more than like 5 or 6 tabs in a window, that becomes overwhelming for me. So I would do a similar thing that this would do, but kind of just spread it out across different
windows.
Oh, see,
I don't do that. Okay. I have them all in one window. I try to limit them to probably less than 10.
Okay.
But like I'll have like maybe like a couple things open for you know, like programming
work,
help.
Personal.
Yeah, and then I'll have like an article and my email open, but then I'll also have like several like whatever things I'm Googling around to figure out how to like do a specific thing in code in whatever Python or JavaScript. And so for me, this kind of would help like, okay, I've got 3 tabs that I've had open for 3 days. I don't really remember what they are. And now can group them together with a label and I can see how many I have for that specific thing.
And you can collapse. I didn't realize this till I just did it now. You can collapse the tabs in a group.
Oh, I didn't even know that. How do you
group
do that?
Label?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
So now we're kind of cooking with some fire.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I mean, it is amazing. When I say it's not going to help me, I mean, it's going to just exasperate my problems. Of like
they haven't solved the problem. It's just like
now I can have 50 tabs open.
The solution was fewer
tabs. But that's
tabs.
Also like part of the problem is like what ends up getting me, like, yeah, I have 8 million, I end up with 9 windows and this all this other shit. And like, cause this is like one of the windows is just like my personal shit over here. This is like my business shit. And then I got distracted by this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of helps. But also at some point, what ends up collapsing is I just have so many windows that the fucking computer doesn't run anymore. It's like, I don't think that's going to solve this unless it's somehow compressing the
data. Yeah, I wonder if that helps, that it's not opening different instances of Chrome, that it makes it run better.
It could.
But yeah, I mean, I like that you can group them, but I think best practice is not to have, when you can, like close tabs, because eventually Chrome always happens that way for me, where I'm just like, okay, it got too big. I've got to close all these, and I'll just start again from scratch and figure out what was really important.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But it happens exactly how Jeff said it too, right? Where it's like, I need this for later. I'm just gonna let's put these tabs over here. I'll get them tomorrow. It's like, you know, you have 20 tabs. You're like, crap, I can't even close this because I'll never remember this. I have no system for managing my life. Damn you.
Yep. And then they're open and I'm afraid to close them, but I don't remember what it's for. So I haven't quite started using, I mean, I just found out about it this week and I'm going to try to actually implement it, like try to use it for real. I love the idea of it. I don't know if I'll actually use it for real, but it looks like it might help. We'll see.
Nice.
Well,
Sean, my rec on I think Jeff's recommended this in the past, and I recently upgraded to the premium version. I think for only $29 a year, LastPass.
Password management as well.
Say you forgot like your TurboTax password, and we're having trouble logging in. You could use LastPass.
I always remember that.
Wouldn't matter if I knew it, because they would just merge it with my other account and destroy it and put me in an infinite loop of pain.
But so recently, I guess there's a free version, but you can only pick mobile or desktop, like if you want to use a free version. But if you want to access it across the various platforms to get on the internet, there's a paid version. I had used a free version for a while, thought it was pretty helpful and probably good for security as well. So I don't mind giving them $30 a year for this. It seems like a pretty nice service. Works on your iPhone too, integrates very well into that.
Yeah, I would second everything you just said. I was using the free version. They kind of forced you to upgrade, but again, I kind of felt like it's probably worth a couple bucks a month, because it really is simplifying my life quite a bit, and it is kind of nice that it works across like literally every platform. Nice. Shameless plugs. Right.
Bookcasecoffee.com for your coffee, dashydash.com for all of your things that you need to do to run your restaurant better.
Thebubbleboard.com for all your stock bubble needs. You could select like a Wall Street Bets group there. Mm-hmm. Actually, that one's kind of screwed me up, because this freaking GME is always like 1,000,000%, and it makes all the other bubbles resize to negligible. But
it's
anyway.
Like when they try and show this all the planets, like relative size of the solar system on a map, and you're like, some of these are really gigantic. I'm losing the level of detail. Yeah. But if you got a stonk that goes to the moon every few weeks, that's going to happen.
You'll know.
That's it.
It's true.
TWPWK.com. Check it out. Maybe we'll post some information about our upcoming live events on Clubhouse there. But probably not.
Maybe we will. Maybe. All right.
Definitely on Twitter. Follow
us there. Definitely on Twitter. Yeah. All right.
Yep.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Worst People We Know was recorded, edited, and produced in the Golden State, with a little bit of help from the Sunshine State.
The Garden State instead of the Sunshine State, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and find us on Twitter at TWPWK. Thanks.
All right. Yeah, let's check this gain. That was fine this past week, right? I'm at 58. 58 seems like a good one.
58? I thought you took it down to 50 last week.
I think it just creeps up on its own. That's probably what happened last time, why it got. Like, Audacity's just like, you probably want it up at like 90.
Yeah. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing over here. You know,
I'm worried about if I get my own apartment. I think I'm like so excited about getting my own apartment and having my own stuff. I'm just going to go nuts with the podcast setup, like just spend way more, like a lot more money than I should on like a battle station.
So do you have an apartment? No, I don't have an apartment. I have a really nice podcast studio. I sleep in my podcast studio.
Exactly.
We did it, guys.
Nice.
And only 10 minutes over schedule.
We did it.
Beautiful.
Are we stopping?
Stop and recording.
Thanks for listening.